Fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety, and those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors, leaders, and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission. First responders helping each other. And our sponsors, Insight Training LLC, your best bet for fire service tick training. The Firehouse Tribune, where you can expand your horizons in emergency services and learn to work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. LifeScan Wellness Centers, saving the lives of America's heroes. And our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Thin Red Line Decon Products, making decontamination as simple as possible for you with decon wipes, shampoo, body wash, and more. Haas Alert, creator of the safety cloud for our roads. Fry Guy Levers and Nestor Bars, the amazing new hand tools for the fire service. Silver Arrow Coaching and Consulting, unlock your potential from burnout to brilliance. Crackle Magazine, serving the International Fire Service. EFT Corporation, 40 plus years of innovation in donation and payment processing solutions. Health KPI, teaching you how to track the right data to stay at the top of your game. The Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004. The Firefighter Cancer Support Network. The Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The Five Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to have you with us and happy to be here with you. And today, my guest in just a few moments is going to be Mr. Peter Matthews, the editor-in-chief of Firehouse Magazine. He was also the director of Fire Expo, which is now coming into a new name. We're going to talk about that a little bit, Fire Fusion. And we're going to be talking about other issues that are facing the fire service today. And he'll join us in just a couple of moments. Now, if you enjoy this podcast and you'd like to hear more, well, all you have to do is double check with your audio podcast platform. They should have all our library there. And if not, you can go to our website at www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. And when you get on the main page, just use the horizontal menu, pick the tab called podcast, and that will take you to our entire library of audio. I think today will be 228 or 229 episodes. While you're on the website, you may want to sign up for our newsletter. I started editing one over this weekend, and we'll have it out probably next week in time for Thanksgiving. We only send 4 or 5 a year. We do not send spam. We do not give or sell your email addresses. We protect them as best as possible under the laws of the state of Florida and the federal government. We want to thank all our friends on Facebook for the likes, for the comments. We really appreciate the forward of our messages to other people. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. The numbers keep growing. And although I can't get there as often as I wish to, we do get there and we do love to see your comments and your remarks. So thank you so much for all your support. Now, if you do listen to our audio version of the podcast, most of those platforms, the major platforms, provide you an opportunity to leave ratings. Why are ratings important to podcasters? Well, some people just think, well, so we could boast that we got a lot of good ratings. More importantly, those platforms use the results of whether we have good or bad reviews when people are searching for our podcasts. That's right. When they search, if you don't have a lot of good reviews, you don't have any reviews, you're going to be way at the bottom of the list. And you know how big a Google list or a Bing list can be. On the other hand, if we have good star reports or good comments in our podcast history, then we wind up higher. So all we ask you to please take a moment, especially if you're new to listening to Five Alarm Task Force, take a moment, leave a star rating or a couple of sentences. And yes, we want to hear constructive criticism as well. So please don't forget to leave constructive criticism if that's what you have. And that's it. That's our business for this morning. So we'll be back in just a couple of moments with our guest, Peter Matthews, after these words. As always, please stay tuned.
New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 thermography certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training.
Would you like to meet up with Annie and the team from Insight Training LLC? Well, here's part of their upcoming schedule. November 20th, Insight Training will be providing an 8-hour day of classroom and live fire evaluations of thermal imaging cameras for Kernersville Fire Department in North Carolina. This course is completely customized with their top 3 choices that they are considering for purchase. They will receive a classroom evaluation presentation, followed by a small-scale live fire demonstration, and then a full-scale live fire evaluation. The class will conclude back in the classroom for an intensive question and answer forum. This program will be conducted for the host organization on November 20th by Insight instructor Andy Starnes. Coming up in November 27th at the International Fire Academy with IFRT and Insight Training, they will be hosting a class in Germany with the group from the International Fire Academy. December 15th and 16th, Insight Training LLC will provide a 2-day thermal imaging hands-on training course sponsored by Beaver Lane Fire and Rescue and will be hosted at the SPCC Training Center in Monroe, North Carolina, with instructors Andy Starnes and Tim Mills on Friday, December 15th from 6 to 10 p.m. and all day Saturday, December 16th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. The course will cover our introduction to tactical thermal imaging and spending intensive training on the application of those concepts. This course includes demonstrations and active classroom participation that is customized to the host organization's needs. Friday will consist of a 2-hour classroom training followed by an orientation burn to introduce the students to the concepts that they learned in the classroom. Saturday will consist of the following live fire demonstrations: tactical 360, thermal rebound and fire attack drill, and enhanced search methodology drill. Details for registration will be published soon. Please be sure to check the website InsightTrainingLLC.com or their Facebook page for registration and additional details. Insight Fire Training LLC, your best bet for TIC training. The Firehouse Tribune has expanded, now bringing you podcasts, presentations, and training blogs. The Firehouse Tribune is an innovative way for emergency services professionals to interact, share ideas, learn, and train. We are inspired by those who came before us and built a path for us to share knowledge and experience with the rest of the emergency services world, where life experiences and training come together. Check out our podcasts, Station Talk, and the 5-Tool Firefighter Podcast. Want us to speak at your department or event? Reach out to us to set up workshops at your firehouse or virtual event on topics including the 5-Tool Firefighter, 5 Key Attributes of the Well-Rounded Firefighter, and 6 Tips to Guide the New Fire Officer. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. For more info, please visit www.thefirehousetribune.com or email us
at fhtribunepodcast@gmail.com. The new Firehouse Tribune Services, where we live by one motto, not just in emergency services, but in life. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. We're firefighters. We're law enforcement. But like everyone else, we have our aches and pains, sometimes from the job and sometimes not. We realize there are risks with this job. However, sometimes something is wrong with us and we don't know it. Now what do we do? Well, LifeScan Wellness Centers are dedicated to saving America's heroes. For most fire and police organizations, LifeScan Wellness Centers will send one of their mobile teams to assess every member of your department with complete and complex physical exams and blood work. Using state-of-the-art medical equipment, LifeScan staff members provide a multi-procedural exam, including cardiac stress tests, basic lab results, and ultrasound exams. LifeScan Wellness exams have saved the lives of dozens of firefighters and police officers across the country. They have found tumors, aortic bulges, lung problems, and more, many of which were asymptomatic. However, early detection allowed most of these colleagues to have their personal medical professionals mitigate the health issue that otherwise might have led to a darker time. For more information, please visit their website at lifescanwellness.com. Remember, LifeScan Wellness Centers, saving the lives of America's heroes. If you like a good firefighting conference where you can learn, you can share, you can teach, and you can enjoy, well, the North Florida Fire Expo is the place to be. It is an affordable, unapologetically blue-collar fire conference for firefighters who are hungry to learn and improve. Our mission is to passionately pursue excellence through authentic blue-collar training. Come celebrate the fifth year anniversary, February 7th through 10th, 2024, on the beautiful beaches of Okaloosa Island, Florida. For more information, check out their website at www.NorthFloridaFireExpo.com. Again, that's www.NorthFloridaFireExpo.com. You don't want to miss it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force. If you're watching the video, if you're listening to the audio, you already heard our intro and a couple of our messages. But we are pleased today to be here. And our guest today is Peter Matthews. May ring a bell if you're in the fire service. Maybe ring a bell if you're in the fire service. He is the editor-in-chief of Firehouse Magazine, one of our leading trades for the business. He is also has been the director of Firehouse Expo and will be the director of Firehouse Fusion. Did I get that right?
Fire Fusion. Yep. We're dropping the house, but we're adding the fusion. Okay. Yeah.
Fire Fusion, which will be coming up in November of 2024.
That's correct. Yes.
And we've changed locations. I heard we're going to be in Charleston or Columbia.
Correct. Yep. We'll be moving the event to Charleston, South Carolina. Correct.
Yeah, that's a little closer to me. I might actually be able to make that if I'm, and it's not on a Jewish holiday. Thanks,
no, it's
goodness,
not.
Peter, you did
We listened. We listened.
Thank you. No, it's great. It really is. All right. So we are so happy to have you back. And let me tell you folks a little bit about Peter. Is the conference director and editor-in-chief of Firehouse Magazine. He has worked at Firehouse since 1999, just a couple of years, serving in various roles on both Firehouse Magazine and the Firehouse.com staffs. He completed an internship with the Rochester, New York Fire Department, and served with fire departments in Glenwood Landing and Rush, New York, and Laurel, Maryland. However, Peter, I must add, is a glutton like I am for ride-alongs. And when he's traveling on business or pleasure, he'll find a firehouse and say, "Hi, can I go for a ride?" And you got to read some of the great comments he puts in about whether it's online or in the magazine about these visits, because like me, he's both a learner and a teacher, and he learns a lot with each ride along, and he shares it with us through the magazine. And with that, first of all, so happy to have you back, Peter. Thanks for taking time for just the little schedule that you have. I know you have lots of free time and can do other things.
No, I appreciate it, Steve. It's good to be back. It's good to see you. And again, you know, hopefully we'll be able to catch up with you next fall, if not between now and then.
I hope so. So you wrote in the October issue, you wrote this great article about It wasn't about firefighting. It wasn't about tactics. It wasn't about ticks. This was about, I guess we can go back to Chief Bruno. This is about simply being nice. Let's talk about that a little bit, please.
Yeah, you know, so it's interesting. I growing up in New York, I love mass transit, right? So around 2020, Fort Worth put in a train from Fort Worth to DFW Airport. So I make a quick 5-minute drive. I'm at the train station, take the train up. Unfortunately, the train schedule is every hour, unlike New York, where it's every 8 minutes, give or take. So, you know, normally I get in and I can catch a train in a pretty good fashion. Unfortunately, this particular night, I delays, got in really late and ordered up an Uber. You know, it's 2:30, 2:40 at that point in the morning. Everybody's tired. And ironically enough, the trip to get to that trip, I had to order up an Uber because I was coming from someplace else. And the gentleman was driving, kept telling me how tired he was. And like, I was at that point where I was uncomfortable. I said, hey, like, I need you to pull over because, you know, it's, you're suffering sleep deprivation and I really don't want to be in your car. Right. To now, here it is. This conversation starts and most Uber drivers are pretty quiet, right? Especially the later at night. So we just started chatting and it was just a couple questions. Yeah. You know, what time did you start? How long are you going? Where have you been tonight? Any celebrities? That's always a question I ask because in Dallas, they're like, no, you know, there's never a celebrity, but that's the New York in me. I got to ask that question. So we just started chatting and then he just kind of started telling me about his philosophies at working, right? It's about a 35 minute ride at that point, maybe 45 minutes at night. I know we ran into construction, had to go around a loop. So we had a little extra time in the car. But it was just interesting, you know, as he was telling me everything, I was, you know, just kind of listening and said, man, like there's a lot of good stuff here that could be applied to being, you know, a firefighter EMS, right? Again, you know, empathy being a challenge these days with some of the calls that just continue to tax the resources in all these different communities. But at the end of the day, you know, it's all about being nice. And just, you know, that person's in your car for a short period of time, just like a firefighter's in a house, you know, hopefully for a short period of time with people, but you know, it's that one visit that makes it a difference. Really kind of turned my eye to some of the drivers. I've never really had a few drivers, you know, you could tell somebody was definitely smoking a little weed before I got in a car or, you know, sometimes you see all the dashboard lights which are on. That used to be more of a livery cab thing. Now it seems to be an Uber thing. So, you know, again, it is what it is. I've had lights on my dashboard before and, you know, I just kind of run with it. But when it's a professional showing up to pick you up and get you home, you know, you don't want to see that stuff. And this conversation was great. Again, it was the basics, right? They had water for you. They had, which I didn't need. I want to go to bed when I got home, but they had water. They had a charging cord, you know, just kind of give you an update. Like, hey, did you hear about this? Did you hear about that? Like they kind of filled me in real quick, or I should say George did. And then, we just started talking about how people treat them and it's unfortunate. Some of the customers he picks up, you know, they treat him horribly. You know, they make derogatory comments towards him. They get rude to him. Some of them want to stop, right? And he can't technically stop, right? Everything he's doing is a data point on a map somewhere. And if he's right, stopped for 9 minutes someplace, he's losing money from another, you know, potential fare. But it also has him getting in questioned about it. So, you know, just being nice and being, a genuine person asking questions. And, you know, I think everybody that gets out of his car, it kind of becomes a friend of some sort, you know, just kind of like, again, you go on some of these calls and, you know, again, riding out in all these different places, you've got the frequent flyers, but you also have those, you know, one time, you know, patience and you want to have a positive impact. Unfortunately, it's not always going to be that way. And I think right, that's, you know, part of the problem. And fortunately for fire and EMS, right, they always have that opportunity to make it a positive outcome. Unlike, unfortunately, you know, a police officer, I forget what the percentage was, right? But like a third of the time, or it might even be a greater number, you know, a police interaction is going to be negative because somebody's getting arrested or, you know, some sort of struggle ensues or some sort of, you know, action takes place that upsets the people, where, you know, on a fire EMS call, you know, you usually win, you know, So even if it's a loss of a house or a home or an apartment or whatever it is, usually, you know, you can find some sort of light at the end of the tunnel, whether it's bringing out a purse or some family pictures or a safe there's something where, you know, that's going to be the one thing they remember you by for the rest of, you know, for their lives. So,
right. And and it's funny because I wrote back to you when I, after I read the article, to tell you that when we went up in August to Boston, which was my first time traveling in over 2 years because of the illness, and we took a Lyft from our home to the airport, and then we used Lyft all around greater Boston, even though for part of it, I mean, I had a rental car, but there were times we had to use Lyft as well. And when we got back here, we had a problem because we were told to go to one stand to be picked up, and it turns out that it was someplace else. And so I was able to reach the driver, and he says, "Don't walk, I'll come to you. Just stay where you are, and I'll come over there." And yeah. He came in, got there, got out of the car, put it out of his hand. I goes, "Hi, I'm David. I'll be driving you today. Let me help you get the bags in and stuff like that." And then we took off, and it's only maybe about, depending on traffic, a half hour drive from the airport to our home in Northwest Broward. But he said, "Where'd you guys come from?" And we told him, you know, it was a family wedding in Boston. He goes, "Oh man, that's one of the cities I really love to visit." He goes, "I'm not sure I'd live there after living in Florida, but I love to visit, you know, Boston and New England and be up there in the fall." It was just, it's so nice, and just led to other things and why he's driving at his age, because he's putting his fourth daughter through college.
Wow.
And he said, "You know, I work a regular 8-9 hour shift during the day, and then you know, 5 nights a week I drive just to bring in that extra cash to do it." But we had pleasant conversations about family, about friends, a little bit about the world. But it, you know, the ride was over, and to me it was like moments, because we had such a pleasant conversation with him, and my wife was part of the conversation, and you know, we asked her what she thought about this. It was wonderful. And we had used our kids were still, our daughter and son-in-law were still living in the Lower East Side. We would use Uber up there with them, and I didn't like my daughters necessarily getting into a car with a stranger like that. But she said, and he said, "No, it's fine, we use it all the time here, it works great." And so we started picking up on a little bit, and instead of paying $30 a day to park the car at the airport, I paid a little more than $30, and two of us got the ride to the airport.
Yeah. You know,
so it was worth it. But to make it but I think, you know, I'm a big follower of Chief John Vance and Josh Bloom and Nick Brunicini on the B Shifter. But what to me is the most important thing they teach is what Nick's late father did for us in the fire service, because I used to read his article every month in when Dennis, may rest in peace, first published Firehouse Magazine. It was in the firehouse, the volunteer firehouse where I was, and I would make sure I, when it came in, I wanted to grab it either first or want to be last, because I want to read Chief Bruno's articles. And that's what instilled in me what he said about the job we have to do. Yeah, it can be a dirty job, it can be, as you said, you know, a frequent flyer, but our first requirement is to be safe getting there and be kind to the people who are going through whatever it is the callers we're answering. Yes, we have work to do, but that doesn't take away from us being nice to the citizens who called us, because we work for them.
Yep. Yeah. You know, and unfortunately, I guess over the last, what, maybe 2 years or so, I mean, we've seen a handful of news stories, you know, that actions are being caught on film and whatnot, which again, I think at this point, if you're not aware that somebody's filming you somewhere, you know, that you have to be aware of that today, right now, before the next call comes out. You know, but it's interesting just to go back to, you know, you're going to the city, right? And I had a hard time switching from a taxi to an Uber.
Right.
Because I was big business, you know, and the taxi drivers are, you know, but the taxi drivers are usually independent, and, you know, they're already paying a huge sum of money for a TAC license every year just for the pleasure to drive you, or the ability to drive you. So it was interesting because one of the things I learned, and I live here in a college city in Fort Worth, and, you know, there's been some stories, you know, about people not getting picked up or people picking up the wrong people. You know, and it's a positive, it's a minus, right? The big positive is everything that driver does is recorded, right? So, you know, if there's some actions that should be taking place that shouldn't be taking place, you know, they can tell what's going on. So, you know, there's that. But what I'm realizing is a lot of these people are doing the hustle, right? And actually, when I used to live in Minnesota, I had a Shay cab was the driver at the time. And she lived like 2 miles down the road. I usually took the 5 a.m., 6 a.m. flights, which always a good idea until the night before. But she was solid, right? And like, literally, it's just I was looking for a driver when I got divorced. I didn't have, you know, my regular driver. And it just was a waste of money to park at the airport. So I was following her on Twitter. We started, you know, I started having her pick me up all the time. And like, no matter if it was 1 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, like, and I still follow her on Twitter. And like, she's the epitome of customer service, right? Like, she's following your flight. She knows when you're coming in. She knows about you, especially if you're obviously a repeat customer. But, you know, she makes that arrival from a 3 a.m. flight, or, you know, having to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning for a 6 a.m. flight, makes it just a little bit better, right? Start your day off really well, or end your day really well. So, you know, it's just like when you knock on a door, right? Like I said in the article, the folks probably don't know you. There's a good chance you don't know those folks, right? The stranger thing. And they're allowing you inside their house. You know, they're trusting you to be inside the house. And there's a lot that comes with that. And again, like I want to get to the airport, or I do want to get home safely. Like, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal, but then you see, you know, there's, again, depending on, you know, how often you follow the media, you know, there's plenty of people that are unlicensed that are driving vehicles nowadays. You just don't know. So, you know, having that little bit of extra courtesy and kindness just goes a long way. Whether it's a 2 minute interaction, or, you know, you're stuck in a car 45 minutes with somebody. I mean, that's a long time. And in a generation now, like, you know, especially post COVID, right? Like, people are struggling to chat with other people. You know, it's common, right? I get on a plane. Rarely do I talk to the person next to me. I don't usually engage, right? It's a different time, right? Communications at a different time. So you're literally in their personal car. It's not their, you know, their work vehicle. You're in their personal car, which they have a sense of pride in, right? Because they're driving you around in it. And I think it takes it to a new level. So yeah, I wish everybody could be like George. I think life would be a little bit better if we had a lot more Georges out there.
Right. I agree. And I think sometimes I would say, when we get on the scene, because the excitement, the adrenaline, et cetera, sometimes we accidentally turn off the nice switch and we want to get to work. And that's what we need to do, depending on the situation, right away. But sometimes we also need to remember that, you know, if this, unless it's a abandoned building, and of course today, what we think are abandoned buildings may not be so abandoned when we get on scene. But the fact is that we have to remember that people are calling us because they need us, or in their minds, they need us. And we're answering that call. And we have to remember that it's, for the most part, even if it's a house fire, it's a human-based issue that's bringing them to, you know, to reach out to us. And so you can't just, you know, well, I want to tell you about, no, shut up and let me do my job. Get over to the side of the street and let us do our job. You can't do that. You have to, they're already upset from the moment they dial 911, whether it's a medical rescue or fire or whatever it is. They're going to be upset. And our job is to reduce that anxiety a bit so they can take a breath and we can do our job. But I think sometimes we forget about taking care of that person, having somebody, you know, not every firefighter can just stop what they're doing and walk over to them and say, hi, we're here, what can we do for you? But whoever the liaison is going to be with the family, whether it's the first officer or it's going to be a battalion chief coming in, needs to get to that family and get information from them and tell them, yeah, we understand and we're here to help you. We got to take those couple of moments, find a way to get those moments on these type of calls that, you know, people are going to be upset. You know, again, we saw, you know, I haven't been a Dick Wolf fan other than Law and Order, but when I saw LA County Fire and Rescue this summer, I was truly impressed again, because it brought me back to, and I'm a little bit older than you, my days originally watching Emergency. Mm-hmm. And even though I didn't plan on being a firefighter and it happened by accident, it was, that was part of the, what propelled me to go ahead and do it when I was offered to join the department, because I saw what Emergency was doing, LA County was doing. And all the episodes are based on actual calls that LA County had responded to. And they were wonderful to share all that information with Jack Webb and Bob Senator and things like that. But it taught us, at least it taught me, and I'm sure I'm not alone, I'm sure there are thousands out there who watched the show originally and still watch it today, as I still do, that we can still be firefighters and paramedics. And we can still be nice to the people when we respond to their calls. Are we going to have topsy-turvy calls, even though we try to be nice? Yeah, but that's with other people. We can't gauge every single person to be the same. But we can't lose. That should be the number one item in our tool belt on every call, is being nice to the reporting person, because they're only calling us because they need us for something.
Yeah, and it's again tough, right? Society has changed. People's actions towards other people have changed. These situations, I mean, unfortunately, we're just seeing more and more, you know, situations of violence as we approach, December. I have to think of what happened in Webster, outside of Rochester, where the firefighters were shot and killed. And interestingly enough, right, like something similar happened to my father when I was in elementary school, and the school next to my father worked for transportation department. So his office was right next to my school. So every time, we're at lunch at recess, I'd bounce over and see him. And one day they had a call for a nosebleed and ended up my father just, like normally would do, right? Walked over, went in the house to see what was going on, knew the family. And the gentleman pulled a gun, and he was just not happy with life. And my father was able to talk his way out, right? I remember they pulled us out of the school. They put us all on the other side of the school. Nobody knew what was going on. And, again, listen, it's that once in a lifetime call that we hope nobody gets. But, we're seeing more of that, too. So I get it. It's tough. You have to go in guarded, but also, open at the same time. I'm actually working with somebody right now on just an article about what to do after a fire, right? Because again, people have to get back, right? They got to get back. They got to decon. They got to get their rig in service, right? There's a lot of stuff to do, and I'm not saying I've seen it happen. I've heard a couple stories. I've heard some folks that have told me when I tell them where I work, and you're like, oh yeah, my house burned down, and then they left, and that was it. And like we waited for Red Cross, right? And again, like, even that, Red Cross has changed since COVID, right? A lot of places, they don't necessarily go out to the scene anymore. You now get somebody's phone number, and Red Cross, says, go to this hotel, and, there'll be some gift cards there for you in a little bit. And like, it's a tough time to suffer an emergency because the way things are. I mean, go to a hospital, same thing, right? You're behind that glass partition, and you check out, we'll email you the next steps. And it's like, hey, what about somebody who needs a hand being held, elderly folks, or, somebody that just has never experienced something like that before, and they need that little bit of extra, boost. But, fire companies have to get back because companies are being cut, or, there's short staffing, or, run volumes, or again, even the decon process, right? After a good job, it's going to be hour and a half of getting everything cleaned up. So you want to get back and get back in service. So you tend to take up a lot quicker than in the past. So, even something like that is leaving a fire, like that's just an article that we're working on right now. I think is really important to kind of share with the folks. So,
yeah, it is. And I remember when I was up and visiting Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, because that's where my wife's sister and her family live outside of Philly. And by the way, folks, speaking of Philly, I want to remind you that next Tuesday, our interview for Five Alarm Task Force is with Commissioner Adam Teal of the City of Philadelphia Fire Department, who I've been after for a long time to get on the show because the dramatic series that we proposed for television about the fire service was based on the Fire Marshal's Office with City of Philadelphia Fire Department, and the Film and TV Office loved the pilot script. So that city has been near and dear to me, visiting my wife's family up there. And I'm really looking forward to having the opportunity to interview him next week. And one of the things that he is also big on is the whole concept of customer service. And I've, you know, a number of the chiefs that have been graciously accepted my invitation have talked about that as well. And that, because that is what we do. We give customer service. The difference is that we may just not know our customers in certain circumstances. If you're in a big city, maybe there's a chance you might run into somebody. But if you're in a smaller community or you're in a volunteer community, Parpay, there's a good chance you're going to know people that you go to help. And that happened when I was in upstate New York. That was because of my position in the synagogue. I knew a lot of people in our fire district, even though it was a small district. But I probably had in the 3.5 years, I probably had over a dozen calls to people's home that I knew.
Yeah.
You know? And one of them was, unfortunately, to know it was a fatality. We couldn't revive the gentleman, but the family was so relieved that I happened to be on that call because they knew me from the synagogue, and they knew that not only did I work hard to try to resuscitate the husband and father, but they knew that ritually I could help them while I was there, just taking off my helmet, taking off my bunker coat. And then I became Steve, the synagogue guy, and was able to help them through what they had to go through. And, you know, for the next year and a half, I kept getting cards like every 6 weeks or so thanking me for being there and helping them out.
That's nice.
And, you know, you couldn't pay for that kind of response. It's just because we were nice. And I think that Chief Bruno's lessons need to be the very first thing we discuss when we do a training, that our first job in our communities is to be nice to the people we serve. Yeah, there are going to be people, as you said, there are going to be crappy calls and very troubling calls and calls that we need help from our brothers in blue and our brothers in green and white. But we still have to be nice, because if we're not, again, if it's a small town, everybody's going to hear about it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
if it's a larger place, the chief might wind up hearing about it. So, you know, and not that we did something wrong. It's just that person was in a foul mood and took something we said or took something we did in the wrong way. And then they complain about it. And we've all gone through that. You know, this is part of, as you said, part of life. But I think that it's incumbent upon us as public servants. Again, doesn't make any difference if you're a career volunteer or part pay, even WUI. We are public servants, and that's why this article hits so deep for me, because it is so important, especially as you just said today. Today's a different world than it was at, you know, January 1st of 2020. Everything's been turned upside down. We and our generation never saw anything like this for the most part, and we were running around like chickens with our heads cut off in the barnyard. So that article really made me think that the best way is that if we just start off with our first step being nice, we can do everything after that. And we're good. We know what our jobs are. We do the very, very best we can. We always give our best. But if we don't take care of our client at that moment, then we lose our credibility. And the last thing we want is for them not to want to call us. Because they had a lousy meeting prior to that.
Yeah.
And they really, maybe they, the second time, they really, really need us. And we just have to remember that. And I think that's who we got to be. Yes, we're professionals. Yes, we go through hours and hours and hours of training, hours and hours of practice, classes, conventions, local, regional, national, to learn and learn and learn. But the basic, you know, you're not going to open up a can of frosting and just eat that, right? We bake a cake and we smear the frosting on the cake. So you can't just be the one thing, because you're dealing with people 99% of the time.
Yep.
Yes, we all have animal calls 99% of the time. Let's start out by being nice about it and go from there. And learn from Peter's article in the October issue of Firehouse and what we've talked about today. So remember that, please. It doesn't hurt to be nice. It doesn't cost you anything either. Maybe a few seconds, a minute or two. But boy, the return could be amazing. And that's the key. We have to remember. All right. So let's move on now. And let's talk about another issue that you and I have kind of touched on. And the magazine has been doing a great job covering both career and volunteer issues, because right now, both of our ranks are sorely depleted. And I quote him again every time we talk about retention and recruitment, because I used to call it recruitment and retention. And our good friend, Chief Anthony Correa, was the one who corrected me when he said, "Steve, it's got to be retention and recruitment." And I said, "Why?" He says, "So we can't keep the people we have, how the hell are we going to get anybody else to come in?" And I said, "You know, Chief, I never valid thought point. That way." Yeah, it's a valid point. So both sides of this coin are facing tough times. We see departments, paid departments, putting ads all over the country trying to bring in new people. We see the NVFC, the National Volunteer Fire Council, working their tushies off to help, again, prepare materials that volunteer departments can do. You and I both know that the concept of volunteerism has changed dramatically over the years. You know, I started back in the mid-70s where, you know, you were almost deputy king if you became a volunteer firefighter in these small communities.
You were in that town, yeah.
Yeah. And the community was always backing you up. They had you back. They cared. Society has changed. You know, my day, yes, my wife worked, but we didn't have any kids. And I worked 60, 70 hours a week at my job, but still donated my time to the fire service. And I think that today, you know, we find most married families, each parent, probably both parents are working most of the time. At least one parent is probably doing another part-time job, and maybe the second one's doing part-time as well as full-time. And the kids, well, they have all these after-school programs and stuff like that, but then they have their homework and stuff. It's difficult for a parent to break away to volunteer today. And at the same time, our departments, our career departments, are being shorted on budgets that they really need. They don't have, you know, we saw just what happened with Atlanta, where thankfully the trades and general news picked up how difficult they were, the situation they were in with not having equipment they could use, and how it was raising response times and other problems. And last week we got to see the good news that the city of Atlanta created a tremendous grant for both the fire service and their police department, which were sorely needed. But Atlanta's still a big city, and they put up a lot of money. So how do you see and that what we can do to keep the people that we have, encourage them to stay? It doesn't just have to be, we'll just give them a bigger check. Yeah, we'd all love to do that if the means were there to do it. But the communities are being very didactic about how much money, how much taxes they want to pay, and how much they want to pay for their fire service or police coverage, things like that. So they don't want to see budgets go up by, you know, $10 million higher than the previous year. So we're caught in almost like a sticky spider web. How do you see us being able to move through the crisis that we're in? We'll start with this topic now. We'll take the break during it, but I think it was apropos to move right into this, because, you know, again, sometimes the people who are against us getting more money in our department are people who we service and may not have been at our top game when we help them. And they see that as, why should I give them more money? Because they weren't able to help me when I was here. So why are they going to help anybody else? So what's your opinion there?
Well, we'll need a couple hours. So we'll take two or three breaks between now and the end of that one. So, you know, it was interesting. It was a Wingspread in July of 2021, and that was it's every 5 years a group gets together, and really they deep dive into, you know, the fire service today, and, you know, 5-10 year look. And, you know, unfortunately I was a day late. My one flight to Milwaukee that day was canceled. Literally, I could not find another. I'm going from here to Milwaukee. I thought I could get into Chicago, nothing. So I missed the first day, and you know, rolled in kind of, you know, mid morning the second day. So first breakout group we had was about, you know, staffing. And it was confusing. I think, you know, my first question was, are we strictly focused on the fire service, or are we looking at volunteer and career? Because everybody in that room was on the career side. And it wasn't a knock towards one side or the other. It just so happened to be that the room I was in. And we started talking about it. And it's crazy because everyone's like, oh, we can't, you know, we're losing people left and right. We can't keep people. We're doing tests. You know, I wrote, I think it was in August of 21, the column was, what's going on? Because, you know, by the end of that meeting, and then I was at another meeting a few weeks later, and then at FRI, and that was 21. So that would have been FDIC. So there was a lot of events like every week because the world just kind of had reopened. And it's literally the same conversation, right? We can't keep, we're losing people. You know, they're losing assistant chiefs with 2 years until, you know, they max their pension. Volunteers can't recruit, you know, after a year of, you know, stations being shuttered because of COVID. I mean, I live in Texas. Everything was kind of opened up by what, May or June, you know, but volunteer stations in New York were still shut down March and April of 2021, you know, a full year later. So people kind of lost that sense of camaraderie, and it's gone. I mean, a lot of places it's truly, you know, it's still lost, it's still gone. So I don't, you know, I don't know, you have to be very, you know, specific at what you're looking at, right? Because there's the volunteer side, there's the career side. I think, you know, the combination side has fared pretty decent, right? Because some people are kind of dabbling, right? You know, I don't know if I want to be a firefighter or not. Some people say it's great. So they do it part-time, right? They take their training, they do one shift a week. And I think, you know, I think that's a key in volunteer departments where it's applicable. That's the catch, right? So when I moved to Maryland and did my short 6 months in a fire company there, I'll never forget. They're like, yeah, which night do you want to choose? I said, well, I guess I'll come down Tuesday, Thursday, you know. And they said, no, you just have to do one night. One night, that's it? Yeah. That was the best thing. You know, because now that kind of gave me, you know, I lived 15 minutes from a station. But now, like, I really only had to worry about one night or two nights a week. And when that's applicable, that's great. Unfortunately, you know, that, or fortunately, that's going to take care of the bulk of the calls, right? Just like anything else with the insurance policy, having a fire department, you having 3 to 6 people on a duty crew is the best thing I think that you could do. But when you're, you know, if you're running 80 calls a year, you know, that's a tough one, right? But you know, that sense of duty crew, that's when you're going to guarantee some training. That's when you're going to guarantee some camaraderie. You're going to guarantee, you know, people are being brought up to speed as to what's going on. You guarantee staffing, and that's what it's about at the end of the day, right? It's about responding to that emergency. So I think, you know, duty crews where applicable is really a really good solution on the volunteer side. You know, Jay Jester, he's out of Maryland. He wrote a great article. It was brief, but it was about one of his article or one of his classes that he does. And it was called Taming the Tigers of Transition. And I think it's an honest assessment that places have to have, you know. I know of a place that, you know, they have a full-time medic. I think it's like 18 hours a day now, but they just, you know, inscribed full, you know, 100% volunteer on their trucks. So they didn't want to put the person on 24/7. And it's like, but do you realize that, like, at some point, you know, somebody in your family might have a really bad outcome because you wrote 100% volunteer in your rig and you didn't want to be that way. And there's nothing wrong with it, right? Again, I mean, you know, coming from a family of volunteers, it's great, you know, but times have changed and you have to look at that. And you know, Jay's piece is great because it really, you have to ask those hard questions, whether you're a chief or you're an incoming chief. You know, I couldn't tell you how many times this year, it's got to be 20, 25 times. We've seen departments primarily in the Northeast shut down, right? Whether it's an accounting issue, whether it's a financial issue, whether it's a lack of certified, you know, firefighters, whether or not there's accountability to the community. Now, listen, there's some of that, you know, small town politics. There's nothing you could do. But you know, when there's an accounting issue, that's where you, you know, you take that 26-year-old or the 32-year-old and let them be a fire chief or an officer, and let an older person in the community, you know, who doesn't necessarily want to be an active responder, take on that role. I mean, and that's not anything new, but I think right now, if you want to sustain a volunteer model, that's one of the things you really have to do. You have to shop, you know, shop for the board of trustees or commissioners, or, you know, the e-board or whatever you want to call it, the administrative side of the department. You have to look outside, you know, don't bog those folks down. You know, the folks where my, or the parents where my folks live, they do like a pizza sale, right? They have no restaurants in there. They have one restaurant, but it's like kind of open, kind of closed. It's never really, I've never been by it where it's open, but the fire chief said to me one day, he goes, "Yeah, we've got the best pizza in town." I said, "Really?" He says, "Oh yeah, absolutely." And he goes, "And then when we sell wings, we have the best wings in town." I said, "Really? Well, come to find out, yeah, it's because it's the only restaurant in town." But think about that. I mean, that's, you know, 5 or 6 days a year, these people have to take off time from their jobs, take away a Friday from their family, and all the prep work that goes into it, right, on the Wednesday and Thursday before, and then Saturday having to come back and finish cleaning. But, you know, they want to volunteer, they want to help, but then they have to find the money, and that's a broken system. And again, I don't know there is no answer, right? I don't think anybody right. has that, because every single community is different. What I've seen here in Texas is these emergency services taxing districts, they seem to work out pretty well, right? It's kind of a win-win. So, you know, recruitment is key, but I think, you know, Tony definitely has it right. Retention is the best thing, right? Why spend time chasing people that you have to train when you can spend that time retaining the people that are already trained? And on the career side, I think, you know, it's just, I think there has to be a lot more transparency in the hiring. I mean, I've heard what I would deem a nightmare story, right? Like a firefighter shows up and it's 5 o'clock and he's asking his officer, like, "Hey, where's, it's his first shift. He says, where's my replacement? Where's my relief?" And they said, "Well, he'll be here about 6 o'clock in the morning." And I said, "Well, we were in the academy. We left the firehouse at 5. I didn't realize we work overnight." Like, "Yeah, man, it's a 24-hour shift." And within 2 weeks, that guy was off the job because his family didn't want him, you know, away at nights. And I mean, that's a worst case scenario, but you know, it's happened more than once.
Right.
So you have that, but then you also have, you know, the glitz and glamour of the backdraft poster type job, when in reality it is the, you know, pulling a kitten out of a sewer, or, you know, again, is it fulfilling? Yeah, but it's not what it was. You know, and then in places where you have fire-based EMS, I mean, you see a lot of that burnout, right? Because somebody being stuck on an ambulance, and I shouldn't say stuck, but assigned to an ambulance for 12 or 15 years. You know, there's got to be some give or take. And I was at an event. It was actually a virtual roundtable during COVID. So I asked this chief, he ran a fire-based, pretty big fire-based EMS system. And I said, like, what do your engine and truck and rescue firefighters do during the day? Like, do they get time for PT? Yeah, each company has 1 hour. Figure 45 minutes of PT, followed by 15 minutes to get showered up, get cleaned up, where they're pretty much out of service. I'm like, wow, that's, you know, that's pretty cool. So what about the ambulance? No, you know, their goal is to keep that ambulance on the street, you know, as much as possible. I said, well, don't they need that? And they said, well, you know, and the chief, I think he kind of realized, like, hey, you're right, you know? And he goes, well, they're getting their PT by working out, lifting people all day. But even at that point, the PT is more like just physical, you know, physical training. Yeah, it's like, you know, so something like that where you really, I think, you know, places like that that are running that busy, you know, they really have to look at that, whether, you know, they split those calls up. But, you know, on the career side, it's just going to come back to money. And on the recruitment side, I mean, there's a city here in the DFW area. I think they ran four tests last year. And they couldn't hire 40 positions. Like, it doesn't, and I don't know, nobody could figure it out, right? Like, why is it not, you know, 5 years ago, it was the coveted job, right? And maybe everybody used to say, I'm living the dream, and I work at America's best kept secret. Maybe the secret got out, and that's part of the reason why. You know, but I just wrote in Rochester in New York, you know, and that's going to be interesting because they're going from days and nights. I think they're one of the last departments in the country to still work, you know, 10s and 14s, and they're going to be going to 24s pretty soon. And I mean, I don't think it's going to, everybody in the county, Monroe County, where they're at, that's career, you know, is doing at least a 24, if not a 48 shift. But I, you know, I wonder what that's going to do to the department, because they do a really good job of making sure that the crews on days, you know, are getting training, right? They might pull engine 5 out of service, you know, for 3 hours to do, you know, live fire training or something like that. But the city is staffed for that. Well, now when all of a sudden you have this 24 shift, you know, this 24 hour shift, I think that, you know, that might change some things up. And I remember one firefighter was talking about it and said, yeah, the divorce rate is going to go up in the city, you know, kidding, but you know, it's going to completely shift the way things are going. But in order for them to attain, you know, future recruits, they have to be able to keep up with that, because right now I think they're working, you know, like 18 days a month, right? Almost like an office job type environment. Maybe it's a day or two less. So I don't know. You know, I mean, it's something the fire service has never seen, which has been the norm, right? The norm over the last 3 years is unprecedented, right? And it's still a phenomenal job. I mean, you know, sometimes there's leadership issues, but that's going to happen whether it's an office job, a fire job, police job.
Exactly.
You know, I think the best crew may be like the roadside, you know, assistance guys, because they're out by themselves, kind of like a police officer, but they don't have a sergeant, you know, breathing down
right,
their back.
Right.
But you know, it's just all changed. But you know, the accountability is greater than it's ever been. You know, whether it's you being on camera or, you know, you filing your reports or, you know, with online training, you know, there's really no way for you to miss on training. You could, you know, I think a few years ago you can kind of skate by and do one or two things you didn't want to do, but you know, that accountability is greater than it's ever been, and that makes it a challenge for some folks. But you know, to see somebody walk away after a 15-year career on the you know, the paid side, or you know, even 18 or 19 years on the volunteer side, you know, there's got to be a way to still, you know, keep that experience there for when it's needed.
Right.
You know, maybe they lessen the requirements, right? If you're 10 years or less than the volunteers, you have to meet this requirement set, and you know, 10 to 15 is this. And I think, I'm not sure if it was like that up in Onondaga County for you, Steve, but like, I think it's 20 or 25 years, your life status at that point, you know, you don't really have to make those requirements, but those bylaws are from the 50s or 60s when, you know, an ambulance call was like a big deal,
right?
You know, or fire was, you know, fire was a, you know, big deal. Now it's, you know, everything else, the automatic alarms, and it's tough. It's, yeah, you know,
it is so. Very true. All right, let's take a break here, folks, because when we come back, I'm going to ask Peter, I'm going to talk about what my prior guest last week, Dr. Gamaliel Bear, posits as maybe a different way for our hiring process, how we're looking at for both career and volunteer. And I think you'll like what you have to hear. So we're going to take a break here, and we'll be back with our guest, Peter Matthews, right after these words. As always, please stay tuned.
The tone sound and the dispatcher announces, Stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. And that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lay, and head for the open front door, where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. Crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see, it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down, that forces everyone else to change their task to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go to. Face peace on.
Remember when you were a young boy or girl and someone bullied or teased you? Where do you most often turn? Like many of us, you turn to your family. If you're a first responder, you probably no longer worry about those childhood problems. But there are plenty more that can affect us. Lack of sleep, the tragedy and horror we often see, even life's everyday stumbling blocks, like family illness, money, job problems, and more. So where do you turn now? Your gut reaction might be to keep it to yourself and not tell anyone about the hell you're going through. However, that's not going to help you or anyone else. Instead, you could start with your second family, someone you work with at the firehouse, on the ambulance, or at the station. You spend a lot of time with them, and most of them understand many of the problems you're dealing with. Reach out to a coworker or an officer you trust. Speak to clergy at your house of worship, or contact your schism team. Don't keep it inside, gnawing away at you. That's not good for you or anyone around you. Know that there are people who stand ready to listen to you and help you without passing judgment. Remember, to carry out your oath to protect life and property, the first life you have to care for is your own. Brought to you by 5-Alarm Task Force, along with the Critical Incident Stress Management Team in your area, close by and confidential.
It just slows me down.
It's too hard to do it and put my gear on.
I'm not comfortable.
I'm a big guy. I can't do it.
I'm just not comfortable wearing it.
You gotta be kidding me. Real firefighters don't need them.
Come on. There's no way I can wear my SCBA and my seatbelt at the same time.
Yes, we've heard all the excuses, but we can think of at least one good reason why you should buckle up. Can't you? Be a hero to those who mean the most to you. Buckle up. A message from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
Hello, and welcome back to this episode of 5-Alarm Task Force. I'm Steve Green, your host. With me, my guest today is Peter Matthews. He is the editor-in-chief and conference director for Firehouse, Firehouse Magazine, Firehouse.com. And by the way, if you don't get the daily news blast from Firehouse.com, you should be. Okay? I'm just going to say it that way. If you're a firefighter or fire buff, and you want to know what's jumping and jumping off the page in the fire service on a day-by-day basis, weekday, and that is the Firehouse News Blast. Look for it. Sign up for it. It is something, it's a very important tool in our nonprofit because we're looking for the LODIs and the LODDs so that we can reach out to that injured firefighter or the family of a firefighter who made the ultimate sacrifice. We can offer a disbursement to them. So the firehouse.com news blast is something that is not just do I love reading in general, but now for the last almost 3 years, we use it as part of our research to help our brothers and sisters and or their families in dire need. So please, I can't recommend strongly enough, get this news blast. It's very important to keep us appraised of what's going on basically on a day-by-day basis. And of course, the website will even often have more information. We might get referred back there, but there may be a larger article there. So make sure you take time to go to the website, firehouse.com as well, because there's often more there. And of course, there's lots of other stuff there. There's the training part. Our mutual good friend, Captain Mike Daly. And I heard a very cute story about your first meeting with Firefighter Daly.
I don't know anything about it.
I know, you know, yeah, it's gone. The memory, that's it. I'm getting older. But yeah, Mike, he's just a great guy, a great teacher. And
phenomenal.
You know, he's one of the firefighters that I've said I'd go through the gates of hell with him as my officer in a heartbeat, you know. And to hear how successful he was, I said, you know, how did it go with your classes? He goes, it was the best classes I ever got to do. He said, it was so big that Peter had to go find a bigger room for us because we had more people than we could fit in that classroom.
We were dragging chairs across the hall. I've never done that before. Yeah, after we moved him into the other room. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
And that's great to hear because not only is that great for him, but it's great that the people are there for the Firehouse Conference and they're getting this from being at a national conference like the Firehouse Expo. And I have no doubt that Fire Fusion, coming up in 2024 is going to be as good, if not even a notch higher than what we're used to at Expo. And I'll forever be in gratitude to Firehouse Expo, because it was the one in Baltimore in 2000 where I first met Chief Dennis Rubin and the late Chief Alan Brunicini. And I was in such awe of meeting him. And it was just, it was a in the hallway opportunity, but I wouldn't have passed it up because I've been reading him already since 77. So it was great to have the opportunity to meet him and just chat for 2 or 3 minutes with him. And I think, again, you know, we mentioned this before about being nice, but if you haven't read Chief Brunicini's books, you should. If the fire service means anything to you more than a paycheck, read Chief Brunicini's books, because you learn so much about being, not the tactics necessarily, but about being a firefighter and what it takes for us to do that. So let's get back to our discussion with retention and recruitment. And as I mentioned, our mutual acquaintance, Dr. Gamali Albert, had this essay where he said, DEI, diversity, all of a sudden I'm just blanking out now.
Equity and inclusion.
Equity and inclusion, all right, should be the focus, should just expand a little bit to include the body, the mind, and the soul. Now, in many ways, that makes sense because the body is very important. There is a lot of physicality in being a firefighter. It's not sitting in the nice, comfy chairs you see on television, staying on your Kindle or on your phone. There is a lot of work in the firehouse you have to do. There's a lot of training you have to do. And you have to be ready for really strong, long drawn out, physically exhausting calls that you may be on. And if you're not in good shape, you're not going to be able to do it, or do it correctly, or do it for length needed. So body makes a lot of sense. Mind, what do we grade? Do we grade a prospective applicant just with a 25 question written test where you put yes or no, X a box, and that tells us everything we know about, we should know about that person, this applicant who wants to be join our department? And equity, I mean, let's, what is it? We have to be equal. You know, finally, we, you know, it's taking well over 30 years to get a decent percentage of women in the fire service, but we need more. And their interest is more. They want to do it. And why, if they're physically able to do it, they have the mind, body, and spirit to do it, then why the hell aren't we bringing more women in to the fire service as well? Yes, I'm one of the old guys, right? I've been out since most of you have been in. But the fact is that times have changed. As Peter said in the first segment, you know, we're looking at a different world today than even we had in 2020. Our attitudes are different. Our emotions are different. Our nerves are different today. But we need to work to make sure we have the right staffing, the right amount of staffing, the right people doing the job who are there for the right reason, and protecting, providing that protection to our communities that we take that oath to do. So what is your feeling about this idea of DEI, including mind, body, and spirit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the holistic approach, right? And I think that's part of it. I think DEI is very confusing, right? There's 6 different ways to look at it. You know, it some say it comes from the business world, some say that it comes from, you know, city governments, you know, it's, so we don't even really understand the root of it. I think most of us don't, and what the goal is. And again, it's really looking outside the box. I think, you know, there's a lot of that, you know, and it's again, I was riding, earlier this year, I think it was in the spring, and, ride with a gentleman who had been on about 2 years, and we were chatting, and I said, oh, did you know there was a high school program? Did you get to the high school program? And he said, no, it was a high school program. It was a think you had to enter in your sophomore year, so you had to apply in the freshman year. But it was only every 3 years, right? So it's unfortunate, right? If you were a year too old or a year too young, you missed this opportunity to essentially get into this high school program and then, at 18 have a job opportunity as long as you pass the test, because they were at the top of the line because they did want to hire from within the city residents. He was in a position where he asked about it and he literally was told, oh, yeah, that's not something you'd be interested in. So his classmates got hired. You know, because he would have been eligible. And so he had to wait till he was like 24, you know, and he had a decent job, but he's like, all my friends are saying how great this job is. And, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, he was late. He's jealous of his friends. And so he's been on, I think, about 2 years. But, you know, he said he talked to his teachers and the teacher said, that's not for you. Just move on. And didn't even give him an opportunity. Right. Like, it's reaching out to, you know, younger ages. And one of the things I really talk about before the break, right, is, again, I think one of the places that folks are, I mean, it's not new, but it's a much more desired approach right now for hiring is looking at the schools, right? Like, I think there was a few years where they would go after D1 athletes or really any college athletes, right? Because they already have that aspect of it. I'm not one to say anything about health and wellness, but they've got that aspect of they're dedicated, you know, they understand the importance of physical fitness. They have a drive, they have a desire, they want to improve, they want to get their times better, their, you know, breathing better, whatever it is that they're doing in their respective sport. So that's been one thing. But now, you know, you have these schools, and we worked with two or three in Columbus. They were like regional vocational schools. And they're essentially fire programs, right? Same thing. They're putting you in a program at ninth grade, and you go through a couple of years. By the time you graduate, you have fire one, you have EMT. Now, again, do they have all the experience that they need at age 18? You know, do you ever have the experience? You, right? Exactly. I mean, that's the great, you know, you never stop learning. And there is a debate about that. And I understand that. But like, you're getting them into the pipeline. You know if they're going to be, and I know it's not, I know Daly's given that term. Przybrowski's also used the term, Steve Przybrowski, you know, the 220-year firefighter, right? There's that. But then there's also, you know, if you get these people at the high school level into your ranks and you know that their background is what you want, that's a win, right? You know, they already understand kind of what's going on. Again, I don't think anybody really ever truly understands what it is until you retire, what's going on. But you do that. And, you know, so that's a great way to do it. And I remember when I used to live in Minnesota, there was a program. One of the local fire chiefs said, hey, come down to the fire academy, whatever day it is. There's a really cool story. These firefighters are in from Sweden. I think it was Sweden. But, okay, cool. You know, so I met them. And I'm walking around and I thought they were just giving these kids a tour. Well, they were high school program. Yeah, it was a high school program. So essentially there, you know, they selected in eighth grade kind of their career path, right? So in New York, we called it BOCES, you know, yeah. I know it's VOTEC and, you know, depending on where you are in the region, it's technical, you know, schools. But in eighth grade, they chose a career path that they wanted. And the rest of their high school career was preparing them for whatever it is, you know, a firefighter, a baker, candlestick maker, whatever it is. But these kids, I spoke to them and I interviewed them all, and it was like the trip of a lifetime. They were on I think it was a 2.5 month trip. It was like 10, 11 weeks. Wow. And they started in the West Coast. So they flew in. They went to the Pacific North. Actually, I think they might have been like in Vancouver, in Washington, or in Canada. I'm sorry. And they did like a week and a half of wildland, right? And then they bounced down to someplace in California. Then they went out to Montana for like search and rescue, forestry stuff. And then they made their way to Minneapolis. And they spent a week in Minneapolis. And I've never seen a more tight-knit group, a more focused group. And like they were just killing it in the fire ground. And, you know, some of them were, I guess at that point they were 17 or 18, because some of them can graduate a year early, depending on how they get their stuff done. But like they were a machine. They were a well-oiled machine. And two or three of them reached out, you know, after the article, and, you know, a few years later, I was cleaning up emails, and I was like, hey, whatever happened? Like, where did you end up? And, you know, some of them stayed in the fire, some of them didn't. One of them had started like a little company. I mean, they were from a small town, you know, like their school was almost like a boarding school. So they were all in, you know? So not all of them stuck out. Some of them still volunteered in their communities, which is great. And, you know, at that point, they're going to be lifelong volunteers. If they went through that program and the bonds they built, you know, with kids from all over the country, like they're there for life. And, but it was just fascinating, you know? So that was 5 to 6, 7 years of formal education on the topic. But when they left, they were ready to go. And then, you know, they also have college over there. So, you know, college is kind of like some of those fundamentals, whether it's the, you know, I don't want to say English, but it, you know, the language, the writing skills, the history skills, the mechanical skills that they didn't learn earlier. So, I mean, that would be a cool program that'll never float here in the US, right? But I mean, I think, you know, those technical schools, which what they have in Ohio and BOCES in New York, the Explorer programs are still super popular in California. Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, and I mean, I grew up for the 2 years I lived in upstate New York, you know, in the Explorer program, the schools didn't really recognize it or make it a sanctioned program, right? You could be a member of the cross country team and have X dedicated hours to go running or, you know, basketball, swimming, whatever it was. But if, you know, if you needed a day off to go to an event for the Explorers, you kind of had to tap out, right? Like, and it would have made sense to have some of that stuff during the day, you know, I think, you know, kind of as a bonus, but also an opportunity to get other, you know, explorers together. So, you know, some of that stuff, I think, is the future of building the next generation, the next generation, right? I don't even know what the next generation is called at this point. When you go that route, but, you know, again, I think the kids under 18 or people under 18, they're a lot more open than people over 20, 25. I mean, just life is completely different, right? And I think that's going to help as some of these agencies look to, you know, diversify their ranks. And again, I think when you say diversity, it's a scary topic, because nobody knows what it means. Does it mean somebody's out, right? I mean, I remember growing up in New York in the 90s when affirmative action was coming, right? And it just kind of, you know, it set a wildfire of emotions throughout the fire service because it seemed like a lot of folks would not be able to get the job. And, you know, I know folks that never got on a job because, you know, they were essentially removed from lists. And, you know, I mean, dozens of lawsuits. I know Chicago is still going through one of their, I think they just settled that one 2 or 3 years ago, but the after effects are still being felt. And that was in the 90s. So, you know, I think that's where these plans need to be a little bit more defined, and the folks that are going to be involved with it needed to educate those folks who are going to, you know, be involved with it long-term, not short-term during the hiring process. But, you know, G's done a lot of good stuff with really looking at it, because again, it's, even if it's a 9-day-a-week job for a career firefighter, or, you know, I'm sorry, 9-day-a-month job, or as a volunteer, if it's 1 or 2 days, like there's gotta be some stuff inside of you, you know, that triggers you for success. And then Brendan Trainer, he's an Arizona firefighter. He's a captain out there. I met him last year, 2 years ago now, and he wrote an article for us last year. And, you know, it's interesting. His company is kind of devising this new hiring process, right? It's not necessarily, you know, you have to be at this city on this date, on this time to take the test. I mean, again, some of it, you know, in order to prevent cheating, like some of that has to happen, but they can start opening the interviews to being over Zoom, right? If you're, sure, you know, if you're 1,200 miles away and you want to be on that department, you know, so Brendan actually, he wrote the article for us. It's kind of like, it was called a new generation or new era in firefighter hiring. And I mean, full disclosure, right? Like he's got a company that does this stuff as well. But the work he's doing is helping you weed out the folks that aren't going to be successful in a job, right? Like, you know, they've never been involved in their community. They've never done a community service unless they were required to, right? For high school. Like, and that's a wild thing. Like, oh, hey, I did my 4 community service hours. All right, why don't you come back next weekend? No, I did my 4 community. But it's again, and it's a different time now. There was a lot of stories, you know, I read a lot of stuff in 2020 and 21. We had the downtime, right, to read. And, you know, they said that was that I guess it's the millennial generation is more adept to volunteer and give back in their community, but it's on their terms, you know. But I was messaging with a friend of mine the other day. Like, her kid gets a cord at graduation for donating blood 2 times, right? Like, I one of the things I like to do is I donate platelets, right? Like, it was this bizarre thing when my brother was the day after my brother's funeral, flying home, and Red Cross calls, said, "Hey, you're a perfect candidate for platelet donations. It helps cancer patients." I said, "I'll be in tomorrow," right? And that's 10 years ago. And with the exception of last year, you know, I do as many donations annually as I can. You know, right now they're giving us socks because it's wintertime in Texas. But, you know, they give you gift cards, they give you know, gifts when you come in. Like, I don't want it. I'm strict, you know, strictly there because I know people need it. My brother needed this at one point. A lot of my friends have needed this. Like, sometimes you just have to do that, right? And that's if it's been missed in a generation, right? If there's a generation that doesn't pass along the importance of doing good for your community, you know, it's going to get lost. And it's not the fault of anybody. It's just not something that was instilled in them. And, like, I still do, like, the bike trails and the walking trails here. If I'm in town, it's in April, like the trash bash, like, I love doing that. It gets me out, it gives me a chance to see, you pick where you want to go, right? And I always go to a different neighborhood, a neighborhood I've never been to, because it gives me an opportunity to get out and see the area. But it also gives me a chance to meet people from that area and learn about it, right? And that's changed my outlook on some of the neighborhoods here in this city and, you know, surrounding cities. So you have to be active in your community. You have to be active in other organizations. And I think that's a key to bringing, you know, to bringing people in to an agency nowadays, because the
Well,
world's changed.
it has. One of our regular guests is Chief Jacob Johnson, Assistant Chief Jacob Johnson at Pearland. And from the first time I had him on and met him, I was amazed at the success and the growth of this department. And there are people waiting in line to join that department. And it's because they look at every firefighter as a human being first, and a firefighter second. And they just, you know, he said the morale in the years he's been there, and he's been there quite a while, but, you know, he's just seen morale rise, rise, rise because better, you know, newer leadership coming in, new people having the interest. They've heard about the department, they heard how active it is and how good it is, you know, family, a lot of family programs for, and that's so important. And I think that's something that I know we had in our two departments. One of the key elements was family, and families were always involved in both departments. There were always family events that we could have, and, you know, you invite the whole department basically to your event, and whoever could show up could show up. But it was very, very important in both those departments. And I remember the chief sitting down with me when he first talked to me about it, saying, you know, we're not just interested in our firefighters, we're interested in their families, because without their family support, we don't have good firefighters or people who want to join. And, you know, coming from suburban Boston, I never heard that before. I never heard anybody, nobody ever asked me about how my family was doing in my jobs. They just do your job, clock in, do your job, clock out, and go home. And that was it. There was no interest. But I think it's not, this is not just a quirk in the volunteer or part pay department. I think there are lots of city departments, whether it's a small city, a small town, but that do have that. They still want to have family events, and they want their families to see what those members of their family who are in the fire service, what they do, and meet some of the people they work with. And I think that goes a long way when a department does that, to let those firefighters know that we don't just care about you doing your job in a firehouse. We care about you as a whole person, and you have a family that supports you. And, you know, maybe the wives belong, in that case, in those days, wives belong to the women's auxiliary for the fire department. You know, we had them in both departments, and they were invaluable because long calls, you know, we didn't have an official canteen service, but if we're extended call, the ladies auxiliary came out and they brought hot chocolate, they brought coffee, they brought donuts, they brought cookies, little sandwiches that they made themselves. They didn't go to a deli. They made tuna sandwiches and cheese sandwiches themselves.
Or Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. And to have these women who in these days, this is the 70s and up to the mid 80s, who some of them were working already. Some, you know, had one or two kids already, but they would make the effort and say, we have to take care of our husband in their department. And it just made it so much easier for those of us on the calls because, and then we had the parties, the birthday parties and anniversaries and the good things. And God forbid there was a sad moment. Everybody came together in that department for that sad moment. And I think when we treat people like people, as opposed to just a name, a rank, and a duty assignment, I think we're going to do better with our interpersonal relationships and eventually into our hiring processes for new firefighters. It was like, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, all on social media was, this generation can't be firefighters. These guys, we don't want them in the fire service. They don't know anything. All they do is play with their video games and their Xboxes and stuff like that. And my retort was, those kids, yeah, in that age. All right. So who do you think's flying our drones today? The kids who are now 22, 23, 24 years old, who have this great eye-hand coordination, are flying our drones around the world to protect this country and other countries. I said, I didn't have any firefighting experience. I could check my oil, couldn't change it myself, fill it with gas. I could use hand tools, claws, screwdrivers, hammers, old manual drills. I could do all that, but I had no idea about fire equipment. And I said that to the chief.
Yeah.
And he said, that's okay. We'll teach you. He says, not everybody's been a firefighter before. He says, but you know, you bring a lot of you to the table for me. He says, that's why I want you here, because you bring a lot more. You have more education than our other formal education than our other firefighters. You've had experience with the Red Cross. He says, because you're coming to us with a list that you should be asking us to do something for you. And instead, you're coming to do what helping what you're wanting to help us. That's one of the things that with what Dr. Baer said that really rang true with me is that if we need to look deeper into the people who want to be firefighters. Listen, we all agree on one thing. It's a calling. Not everybody can do this job. And there are people we don't want to see have to do this job because of what we have to go through and what we see. You know, we see the crap that we don't want other people to have to see. And we do it. And that does, you know, thankfully now, thank God, with behavioral health initiatives, you know, we don't have to keep it to ourselves anymore. My buddy and I, we talk about whenever we're together, he's up in Gainesville. And whenever we get together, we always talk about the 3 or 4 key calls, the worst calls that we were ever on together. And that's our way of venting. That's how we do it with each other, because we were on those calls. We can talk about them today, 40 plus years later, and you know, reevaluate, did we do everything right? Should we have done this? Should we do that? We don't beat ourselves up, but it's a way for us to vent, because we're all, you know, yes. Do firefighters remember some of their worst calls even after they retire? You don't even have to wait for us to retire, because they can happen a week later, a month later, a year later. We can still remember how bad a particular call was. And it takes a toll. And that's why we're blessed now to have a firefighter behavioral initiative. And if you're a regular listener to the podcast, you know that every single podcast, we have a PSA directed just for the fire service about the behavioral health initiative and about the firefighter cancer initiative. Because if we don't work with these initiatives, then we're going to lose the people we have today. And it's going to be very difficult to bring more people in. We know our susceptibility to cancer is any estimate between 400 and 1,000% higher than the average citizen in a community. That's really crappy news. I mean, we love doing our job, but we know that there are injuries. We know some of our brothers and sisters pay the ultimate price for being a firefighter. But on the other hand, we want to try to stay as healthy as we possibly can to do the job as long as we want to, as long as we can.
Yeah.
And I think that looking at the whole person, and I really hadn't thought about it in terms of the fire service till I talked with Dr. Baer last week, because it made a lot of sense to me and what my hiring programs were in my civilian job, and what I looked for in my candidates based on the job I was looking to fill. And it was important to me to learn about them. Were they married? Were they single? Did they have a family? Did they have kids, et cetera? Just so that we knew them as a person, not just as an applicant for a job. And that's how we made our decisions with the committee. So if we can bring that a little bit more humanity to the hiring process, and people see that, who have an interest, and who have a, I would venture to say, Peter, you probably know this better than me, but I would say the vast majority who want to answer the calling have an idea of what they're getting into. That's not the bank job, you know, 9 to 4, that then you go home and you get to just relax and do nothing else. I think they come knowing that this is going to be a special situation.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean,
good.
But that's it. I think it's that transparency just to ensure, because again, I mean, if you're on the job, right, it's like anybody else who's on the job, they know what's going on, right? You just need to ensure that they know what they're walking into. I mean, you can't explain everything, right? Or, you know, you can't say, hey, you're going to see death, destruction, mayhem, you know, maimings, fires, trauma to children, because people don't understand. There's plenty of people who were very fortunate enough to never experience anything like this. And I think that's, you got to be as transparent as possible. But how do you train people, or how do you raise awareness to some of that? You know?
Right. And that's why I think that when most of us agree that what we do and what our brothers in blue do and our paramedics and EMTs do is they feel the calling to help other people through one of our branches. And if they get that feeling inside them that this is a calling, this is what I want to do, they probably didn't gain that just from reading a book, a fiction book about a firefighter or a police officer. They've had some sort of experience, or in their community, they visit the firehouse, talk with firefighters. You know, as I said before, my first exposure was at age 7 with a little fire behind our in the woods behind our home. Well, everybody went to watch them when they pulled the reel line to put out the fire. I stayed, and the engineer was a really nice guy, gave me a lollipop, showed me how he worked the pump and stuff. And I just fell in love with the idea of these men are very special. And I made my parents drive me to all 5 stations in our community. And then when I rode my bike, I went further on. And when I had my car, I was right through Greater Boston to visit. And it was wonderful because I got to meet several hundred firefighters, and every single one of them, to everyone I met, I can't say the guys who didn't come out, but everyone I met in those firehouses was nice to me. And they said, "You're going to be a firefighter?" I said, no, I have a different plan for my career. What are you going to be? Well, I said, I'd like to be a rabbi. He goes, okay. So where's your interest? I said, well, I've always been involved with first aid and the Red Cross. And he said, well, that's great. And, you know, that's terrific. Who knows? Maybe one day you're going to change your mind. I didn't know that was going to happen because I was only, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old. And my mind was pretty well set. But, you know, the opportunity happened. Life took me down that road for that opportunity. And I'm forever grateful that it did, because we are a family. For the loss we were talking about earlier with my and the friend's family, her nephew was a firefighter in Cobb County, just retired in April, for 26 and a half years. And I already heard his name, but he was never in town for me to meet. So we met this weekend because of the loss. And we're brothers, and we're going to be spending time together and stuff like that. And to me, if it was just another, if he wasn't, the guy was an accountant or something like that, it'd be nice to meet him, but wouldn't necessarily be anything beyond that little bit of interaction between the two of us. So I think that bringing humanity to the concept of our retention, because really we need to take care of the people we have who stick with us and do their shifts and cover an extra shift when somebody else needs help. And they're just there for us, men or women. We need to treat them with the respect they, not just as firefighters, but who they are as people, giving of their time. Yes, they're being paid for it if it's career, but it's still a very specialized job that we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and so if we can treat them like that and bring that humanity to both our career departments and our volunteer part pay departments. And even, you know, there's been some, you know, backlash about WUI firefighters and how they're treated by either the county, their county, or the state or the federal government. They're no different than the rest of us as firefighters, career or volunteer. These men and women probably, I mean, you know, look, we climb high ladders, we do high level rescues, but we sure as crap don't jump out of planes to get to a fire call. Most of us. But they do. A lot of them do. And that's something. I love the fire service, but I'm not jumping out of a perfectly good airplane. So I got to give our brothers and sisters in WUI just as much support and understanding that we give all our other firefighters, because it is a hard, dirty, long haul job. And we've been on scenes for, you know, 24, 48 hours on fires and collapses like that, but we don't spend 5 or 6 days in the same area just trying to bunk under a fir tree.
Oh yeah.
You know, so we need to make them understand that we really care about them as people as well. And I think if we can, and I'm not saying sweeten the pot with money, that helps, but I think people look to see how they're treated at a job. I don't care what the job is. How are people treated at that job? And if you get the good scores back, the good reports, then it's a good chance you're going to take the next step. But if all you hear is the BS that's coming, that this, I can't take it anymore, these guys, the chief, we never see him, he's like a ghost, we can't even make an appointment to see him, it's always got to go to the BC or got to be the deputy, yada yada, those departments, I think, are the ones that are losing valuable personnel, because they're being treated just as sticks. You put that stick on this apparatus, you put this stick on that apparatus, and send that apparatus out. When they come back, make that stick do this, make that stick do that, give them their dinner, put them to bed till the next call.
Yeah,
I think that's old school. That's the way it was. And many of our fathers, grandfathers, great-grandfathers were firefighters, career and volunteer, because they cared about their communities. And look, I love seeing the old pictures from New York City of the old horse-drawn wagons and the steamers coming out. I mean, that must have been phenomenal in those days. We can't compare it to today, but I think that was amazing to have seen those firefighters do what they did without the tools that we have today.
Yeah.
And yet remain dedicated to that job until they retired or they passed, one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And that's what we'd love to see in this department today, people who are really there to do a good job, to serve that community. It may not be their own community. They may live in the town next door or the village next door or a city next door. But if they're interested and they want to protect lives and property, we need to give them, I think it's incumbent upon us, especially today, with all the changes that you've mentioned and I've mentioned, that we look at them as a whole person, not just one, you know, a blank applicant who's going to take a 25-question exam and sit through an interview with three chiefs, and that's it. That's all we look at.
It's just any hiring process has changed, right? Whether it's applying for you know, something even as McDonald's, right? I mean, and that's interesting. That story came up the other day in a local forum, right? It was an interesting question because they said, why are there no children working at McDonald's anymore? And is it a forums board or threads or something like that? I forget where I saw it. But they're like, well, if you only wanted kids to work at McDonald's, who's going to be there from 6 a.m. till 4 p.m? So, you know, there needs to be adults there. And it tends to be an older population. And they're like, well, that's a job for somebody 23 and under. And it's funny because they went back and forth. And then somebody chimed in and says, have you seen the hiring process to work at McDonald's now? It's not like it used to be. It's very tedious. It's very tough to get that job. And, you know, I've never applied. I don't know about that place. But, you know, it really makes you wonder, like, again, like, well, I don't know. I don't know what the problem, maybe it's just maybe that person had difficulty filling out the application. I'm not sure what it is. But every hiring process is different, you know, whether you're filling out an online form right now, you might not get a test because of the stuff you post on social media, right? I mean, that's part of your background check. That's, you know, I mean, it's the things that we take advantage of until we end up realizing that, you know, there could be a negative impact. And, you know, I think probably twice, three times a month when I see a memory on Facebook, man, I go and delete that thing right away. I'm like, I can't believe I said that. Nothing bad. It's just, it's stupid. And I 10 years from now, I don't want to look back on that memory and go, I said that? Like, what a foolish thing to say. Again, it's not something that would get me in trouble, but it was just like, it was an inside joke, you know? And like, again, 10 years ago, Facebook was an opportunity for you to do that, right? When you only saw your friends' posts, right? You didn't see all this other stuff that pops up. You know, now I could throw an inside joke out there and nobody will ever see it because the algorithm's the way they go. So again, like even that's changed. But yeah, I mean that the application processes have changed. The jobs, no matter what it is, the jobs have changed. And I mean, look how many folks, you know, came into the fire service to get a pension on the career side. And, you know, they're lucky if they get a 401k at this point. And, you know, on the volunteer side, you know, I know some areas they offer the LOSAP, that Length of Service Awards program. You know, some just offer $5 for a call, $8 for training, that type of thing. And then there's plenty of people who are out there, you know, not ever making a dollar off it, and they're fine with it. But again, just looking, you know, you got to look at that. What is the reward? Is it the money? Is it the sense of feel good? Is it the camaraderie? Is it, you know, they're looking for a place. I mean, you know, when you're a kid, just, you know, like you were saying before, right? When you're a kid and you're looking for someplace, right? If you're from a single parent home and you're looking for a little, you know, decision, help making decisions, a little guidance, like, swing by the firehouse and you can usually find somebody, right? Like that's the unofficial big brother, big sister organization of the US. And that's not necessarily a role that people choose to take on when they become a firefighter. But again, that level of trust is up there and that kind of turns that into that. So that's a person you need to find.
We saw that very clearly depicted in LA County Fire and Rescue over the summer, where the guys from the department in the station in south part of the city, I forget what's called that neighborhood, but they mentor kids who come by, the kids come by with their homework and they were mentoring them and they were helping them with math or they're helping with science. And to see them sitting down, these guys with, you know, 15, 20 years in, and a kid comes up on his bike with a school book with him and they're going to sit down to practice reading or help him with math, stuff like that. That's, and then 2 seconds later, the bells ring and they're going on a shooting two blocks from the firehouse. But seeing them, and again, this is why, you know, I changed my opinion of Dick Wolf's production. He had another fire show that I don't watch, because of the way it depicts the fire service. But to see what he did with these episodes and seeing, and by the way, I looked at it right away and asked a couple of friends about if they thought this was canned for the show. And he said, no, I have a friend out in LA. And he said, no, this is who some of these guys are. And this is what they do. When training is done and there's some free time, though, you open those doors and the kids come by after school and they'll ask for help on math, or they've told them, all right, come back to me after you get that worksheet and I'll work with you tomorrow on it. And I think that was one of the greatest representations of who we are as firefighters, being part of a community. We can collect for charities, we do our holiday celebrations, but when you are willing to sit down with kids, oftentimes from broken homes, bad circumstances, who are trying to get their way through school, but their heads aren't on straight because of what's going on in their lives, they can come to the firehouse and they know that there are people there who care about them, who will help them with homework, give them good advice, how to not to join the gangs, how to be good, you can succeed, and things like that is so important. I think that would be a great article for the magazine. Find these guys in LA County who were doing this, and I'm sure it's not just LA County. I mean,
no.
But they were the first ones to truly be depicted. It just into working with a community, not just answering calls. And
yeah,
again, I think I was so moved by seeing that, being a teacher for well over 50 years. And I teach at every opportunity I can. I think that showing that on national TV was one of the best of any real or fictional fire show that's ever been on since Rescue 8. Yeah, that's how old I am. I remember Rescue 8. But I've watched them all. And reality, et cetera. But this was a great representation. And if this is something you listening to, and you are a firefighter, career or volunteer, WI, you have the opportunity of bringing humanity to your department and reaching out to the community, not just for smoke detectors and batteries, but you know what these our brothers did in LA County, making the time to sit with a kid outside the bay doors, helping them with spelling, helping them with math, a third grader, a fifth grader, a seventh grader. You can't even imagine how far that interpersonal experience could go for that child. And yeah, you could change what might be a negative because of the community that surrounds them, you might change that into the positive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned the McDonald's thing. When I was the administrator and triage director for a large family practice here in Broward, I needed to hire somebody new for the office. So I put an ad in the paper. You had to be computer literate. You had to know how to use Word. You had to use Access. You use Excel. So I put all that in the paper. And we got some calls here and there. And I get a call, and my receptionist answered, and she told me, you know, line 3, pick it up in the back. Picked it up, and it was a gentleman who was asking for the job. I wanted to apply for the job, and I said, do you have computer experience? He said, yes. I said, okay, do you know DOS? Do you know Windows? Where are you? He goes, well, I run the computer on the frying machine at McDonald's. I said, what? Excuse me? You mean the cash register? He goes, no, there's a computer built in to the fryer. So I have to hit the switch to turn it on and activate the timer. And then I have to shut it off when the timer gets off. So that's all computer run. I said, okay, thank you very much for the call. I'll keep it under advisement. Now, you know, again, in a community, we don't know how people interpret the words. Of course, that was in the days when we were all still reading newspapers, which we don't do that much more. Everybody runs to Indeed or monster.com, something like that. But I could have been very crude and rude to the gentleman, but I explained to him that really was not what we were looking for, because we're not food oriented. We are a medical office. And I said, have you worked on a desktop computer? I had asked him. And he says, no, the only computer I work with is at work. I said, okay, thank you very much. I said, I have your name and number here on my list. I appreciate the call. So I couldn't hire him, but I would have been wrong as the administrator to blow him off rudely on the phone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So while we found the story cute, it really tells the story of how do you treat somebody when they're applying for a job at your business or your organization. Yeah. You can blow them off, and you could probably turn them off forever by doing it, or you can get a little bit of information, see if there might be a way to make a fit. It's not always going to happen, but you got to give it to weigh the pros and cons and then go from there. And that's part of, I think, looking at the person and not just, the paper. And maybe with that, if we can convince departments to look a little deeper into the people, maybe we can, increase our numbers a little easier than we are having for the last couple of years. And I think, COVID was the big change, but the societal change from, I finished in 85 when I got disabled out. So, but even then, the department I was with didn't have a problem with volunteers in upstate New York. But now, they're mostly a career department with only a few volunteers. And that's changed because of society's changes. That's what it is. Money's tight. Things are more expensive, way more expensive today. And people need to do what they can to put food on the table, keep the lights on and the heat or air conditioning on going too. So people are looking for work. As we said earlier, not everyone's cut out to be a firefighter or a paramedic or a police officer. But it might do us all a little bit better to look at the whole person and change our definition of recruitment and retention and recruitment, sorry, Chief, retention and recruitment, and see maybe be able to grow our enrollment by some decent numbers by just being more human in our search and hiring processes.
Yeah, I think you're right. Right, it's like anything else, right? It's the workplace has changed, and on the career side, I mean, there's certainly a difference in the types of folks you're looking for, but on the volunteer side, like it goes back to what I said earlier, right? If you've got that accountant, and that's they're 52 and they have no interest in going to fires, let them be a member. You don't have to buy them gear. It's not like you have to buy gear for everybody who walks through the door, and that's maybe that's the reason why, departments are a mix of, career, whether it's civil service or civilian, right? Because it's they're still a member of the department. It's just in a different capacity. Now, of course, rank and file, it's a different story. But, you've got some of these diverse communities. And you mentioned Adam Teal's coming on, Commissioner Teal. And like what they're doing in that city, I was with him at an event a few weeks ago. And like they're doing so many unbelievably phenomenal things. But they've got one of the most diverse populations as a city. And there's even a few of those here in the DFW Metroplex. Like there's one zip code at one point, the chief had written, they had like 26 languages were spoken in one zip code here. And I mean, like, how do you have the ability to communicate? I mean, listen, for an emergency, I'm sure you can find an app if you know the language that the person is speaking, right? But if you need to go out and do community risk reduction, fire prevention messaging, is it your job? Yeah, absolutely. But, when you have one person assigned to 45 schools and, there's only 52 weeks a year and they have to do senior facilities and they have to do businesses and Main Street festivals and all this other stuff. You can't, and you do the best you can. And that's more acceptable in that place on the fire side. The fire suppression side is different. But, you have to have some of that diversity to be able to work in your community and understand, because people do ask. And, I want to speak to somebody, or I want somebody who can, speak my language or understand my my cultures and my beliefs, and it's tough, but that's something that is required nowadays. Most people expect that.
Right.
So you have to make that happen. So,
well, you know, one of the things that is, you and I know, the favorite axioms in the fire service is we don't like change and we don't like status quo.
Amen.
Right.
The both of them. Yeah.
Right. So, we need to change that a little bit and open ourselves up. And I think that I believe that we can make inroads with our recruitment, our retention, keeping the people we have, make sure, look, not everybody's going to be happy-go-lucky, but we can keep them mostly feeling good about the job, feeling good about themselves, feeling good about their fire family, and know that they're able to spend the time with their own family as they need, getting a fair salary if it's a career department. Being a member of the IAFF is a positive experience as well. So that helps you as well. And I just think we just need to do what we can in today's world. Because we're not in my day of 77, we're not in my day of 85. Here we are in the third decade of the 21st century, and we can't operate the same way we did 20 years ago. Life is different. People are different. What we do is different. You know, my day, we had real wood that burned. There was no, benzene byproducts, around in those days. We had a longer incipient stage. Today, that's all changed. Most furniture is manufactured. Most filling is foam from butane and benzene byproducts. So those incipient stages have shrunk dramatically. We don't have as much time to get to a fire call as we did. Traffic is worse. My days, people listened pretty well to sirens when we came through. Today, they can barely hear them, let alone move over for them. We know the epidemic of accidents at accident scenes with distracted driving, which trying slowly but surely to make inroads with that. But we're living a different life than the old fire service. This is not, having two grown daughters, I can actually say this is not their father's fire service anymore, because it's not. I just tried to learn what I can of today's fire service and share and bring people on like Peter and our guests to share what today's fire service is facing and doing, not just reminiscing about the old days. So, Peter, again, I can't thank you enough for taking time from a very busy schedule. I know you're here or there. I will say that I love watching TV show, even though I watch repeats and I continue to watch them, of the Texas Game Wardens. And I get to see those small communities. But that's what I really love. Watching the ones from New Hampshire, Maine, and Texas, I really love to see those small communities, how tight they are. Jasper County, some of the others that I get to see a lot. And just how damn polite those wardens are, and how the rapport they have within their communities. That is what amazes me more. Yeah. That people, for the most part, they'd like to see them pull up. They like to see them. And I know there are a couple of them that say, when they're finished with a call and they're leaving, they say, hey, you need anything? Just give me a ring. And most of them have their direct phone numbers. I never saw that in the Boston area. I've never seen that in the Syracuse area or Greensboro area. But to watch it there and to see a state as large as Texas, but have as many small communities and wonderful people working to protect the wildlife there and so dedicated to it and the people is just enlightening. And I'm glad that I did make it down to Dallas on a travel program that I was when I was an agent, and got to see the greater Fort Worth Dallas area. And it was nothing like I expected. It was wonderful, but again, it was a big city. Two big cities, but a wonderful country just outside of them to enjoy. So I think it's a It's a great state. Never, even though I haven't lived there, I think the people there just seem wonderful. And so I admire that you're down there and as busy as you are.
Yeah, Southern hospitality, you know, it changes you. You know, having gone from New York to Minnesota was a complete, I talk about, you know, culture change, tremendous culture change. And then coming, you know, it's just that the people in Minnesota tend to be a little bit more reserved. You come down here and it's, you know, it's hello, goodbye, have a good day. You know, everyone's gracious and, it's cool. It's really a nice place to live, but you know, you can tell who's a transplant and who's a local, not just by the accent. Cause I mean, the Texas accents, you know, it's rare that you find people with that, but you could tell again, it's the way you were raised. Right. And,
exactly.
And the respect that you know, continue to have for other people. It's apparent in about 6 seconds of interaction.
Yeah. We found the same thing. We moved to Greensboro. They held the door open for you. Said, hey, stranger, you walk past them in the doorway at the market. Hi, how you doing?
What? Yeah.
What? I grew up outside of Boston. Nobody said that, but
yeah.
It's that Southern hospitality really is different than the Northeast areas.
Yep. Agree. Yeah, it's a good thing. It's a good thing, Steve.
All right. Well, many thanks again, folks. If you're watching the video, this will be the end of the video. If you're listening to the audio, you know we're going to have a little break here, and then we'll be back with some more items coming up. But our sincere thanks to Peter Matthews, the editor-in-chief of Firehouse Magazine, for joining us as we talked about. Well, we talked about being nice in the fire service and how important even what it is in relationship with our people in our community, being nice to them, they'll be nice to us, and covering the critical issues that are facing us today in personnel for both our career and volunteer departments. So again, thank you for watching this episode. We'll be back next week with Commissioner Adam Thiel from Philadelphia Fire Department. As always, please keep tuned. Subscribe to our videos on our YouTube channel, 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. And take care of yourselves. Take care of those around you. Let's make sure everyone goes home. Thank you, folks. Bye-bye.
You're listening to 5-Alarm Task Force.
You show up for your shift, but you're not feeling 100%. You greet your colleagues with a smile, but just can't put your finger on it. I'll shake it off in an hour, you think to yourself. You take a couple of nothing runs, but you're still not feeling any better when you get back to the barn. You throw some cold water on your face and think, yeah, that's more like it, and you head back to the day room. With training scheduled for after lunch, you make yourself comfortable in one of the recliners, but as you sit there, you feel ill. You start to sweat, and you feel nauseous. There's a pain in your left arm that you've never had before. Hey guys, you call out. I'm not feeling well. And your voice trails, your eyes close, and the darkness surrounds you. More firefighters die from cardiovascular health issues than any other reason. Don't let self-pride get in the way of taking care of yourself. See your doctor on a regular basis, and be sure to advise him or her that you're a firefighter. Don't be a statistic. Be a healthy firefighter with a long career. For more information, visit the IAFF, NVFC, or IAFC SHS websites.
Drinking and driving is a serious problem that threatens everyone on the road. About 112 million times a year, U.S. adults drink too much and get behind the wheel. The number of drinking and driving episodes has been decreasing, but the danger is still very real. Crashes involving alcohol-impaired drivers kill nearly 11,000 people each year. If you're drinking, designate a non-drinking driver before you start, call a cab, or get a ride home. Never let your friends drink and drive. Even if you don't drink and drive, always wear your seatbelt and encourage everyone else in the car to buckle up too. seatbelts reduce the risk of serious injuries and death in a crash by 50%. Remember, driving drunk is never okay. Choose not to drink and drive and help others to do the same. To learn more, visit www.cdc.gov/vital signs. This message brought to you by the Center for Disease Control and 5-Alarm Task Force.
Our good friend, Captain Mike Daly, wanted us to let you know that the next semester of the Fire Behavior College is scheduled to begin on Wednesday, February 7th, 2024 at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information regarding our FESHE-approved curriculum, you can go to the website at www.killtheflashover, or you can go to this YouTube link, https://www.youtube.com/watch, WATCH, a lowercase v as in Victor, equals F as in Foxtrot, P as in Peter, L as in Lincoln, X as in X-ray, F as in Foxtrot, K as in Kilo, the numeral 2, and in lowercase, W as in Whiskey, H as in Hotel, and K as well. Now, any questions, reach out to info@killtheflashover.com, and they hope to see you in class next semester. If you have any questions, contact us at dalmatprod@outlook.com, and we'll help you there too. Thanks for tuning in. Hope to see you there.
We're really glad to have you listening to 5-Alarm Task Force. But we also want you to know that there are some other terrific fire service podcasts available. Here's the short list. Beneath the Helmet with Chief Arjuna George. Students of the Game with Danny Beauvais. B-Shifter with Chief John Vance, Josh Bloom, and Nick Brunicini. The Professional Brotherhood with Chief Brian Soller. The Five-Tool Firefighter with Nick Higgins of the Firehouse Tribune. Station Talk with Assistant Chief Tom Marciano. Flow and Vent. DTFF, Down to Fight Fire, British Columbia Volunteers. Better Every Shift with Aaron Zamzo. Firefighter Success with Captain Jim Moss. Code 3, the Firefighters Podcast. Make Do with Nick Peppard and Sean Duffy. Getting Salty. Fit to Fight Fire. Remember, to be a great firefighter, you must be always willing to learn.
This message is brought to you by 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. One mission, one family. First responders helping each other.
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
And that wraps this episode of 5-Alarm Task Force, brought to you by 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission. First responders helping each other. We'd like to thank our guest, Mr. Peter Matthews, Editor-in-Chief and Conference Director for Firehouse Magazine, firehouse.com, for joining us to discuss what we can learn about being nice from an Uber driver and our issues with retention and recruitment. Did you know you can find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for 5-Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training, LLC, the Firehouse Tribune, and LifeScan Wellness Centers, as well as our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Thin Red Line Decon, HassAlert, Pry Guy Levers and Nesta Bars, Silver Arrow Coaching and Consulting, Crackle Magazine, the EFT Corporation, Health KPI, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to info@5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 5-Alarm Task Force, on Facebook at facebook.com/5, Apple, T Tango, F Foxtrot, C Charlie, and on YouTube please subscribe to our channel. You know what it is, the numeral 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. Stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, our nonprofit foundation, and our blog on our website, www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.